morning. This is a live reading of the Green Valley News at 9:31 here from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. My name is Mark DeGrom. Thanks for joining me this morning. Let's take a look first at what's happening with the weather here in Green Valley. Today, there's plenty of sunshine, a high of 94 degrees, winds out of the west-northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight will be clear sky, low 56, winds out of the south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mainly sunny, record near high temperatures, 97 degrees, winds out of the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Humidity currently 10%, winds out of the west-northwest at 10. Sunrise today was at 6:02, sets tonight at 6:49. Okay, the National Weather Service in Tucson is expecting Friday's high to hit 99 or 100 degrees, potentially a new record for the earliest triple-digit mark. NWS, that's National Weather Service meteorologist Ken Strongman, told the Green Valley News that for year's first 100-degree day typically comes around May 18th. He said the current record for the first 100-degree day was set on April 19th of 1989. Definitely looking pretty warm, Strongman said yesterday. The Weather Service also advised people to be mindful of daytime highs this week, with reminders to hydrate and not to leave children or pets in the vehicles. NOAA's Climate Prediction Center expects a warmer and drier than average near normal precipitation outlook from April 13th through 17th, according to its models that were released on Monday. This is definitely the warmer part of April for sure, Strongman said. We're definitely above normal. We have been trending like that for the last few days, when we'll continue to do this in the weekend and in the next week. Despite the outlook, Strongman said there would be cooling next week compared to the highs during the weekend. He said the Weather Service expects temperatures to cool to the low 90s following the weekend highs. The potentially record-setting heat isn't drawing heat warnings yet. He said that overnight and early morning lows would still provide some relief. The morning lows are going to be hitting around the 50-degree area, so it'll be cool, he said. It'll be a little reprieve to have those chill mornings where it's just enough for a jacket. Temperatures in Tucson will also be slightly warmer than Green Valley and Sorita, with Strongman saying there would be a minor heat risk through much of the metro area and some pockets of moderate heat risk. It would be above normal temperatures and just put a little more stress in the body to try and cool, so you got to stay hydrated and all that stuff, he said. Potential fire weather during the weekend is also something the Weather Service is eyeing with the warm, dry days. Strongman said the Weather Service expects increased wind speeds in the area on Saturday and Sunday, with breezes and strong gusts possible. It's been very dry and warm, so if we got enough wind, we definitely have some elevated higher weather concerns, he said. So if any fires do start, it could spread a lot more easier and much faster. And in a related story, the National Weather Service in Tucson is looking for volunteer 2025 Southeast Arizona Skywarn spotters. The Weather Service wants to gather new spotters outside of the Tucson metro area, including Amado and Aravaca. Weather Service is also expecting spotters in Suarita, Green Valley, and the surrounding unincorporated areas. The service also reports participants need to attend one free training session that's held online to learn about cloud features, severe thunderstorm recognition, severe weather safety rules, and reporting procedures. Sessions usually last around 90 minutes. The service does not require registration for the virtual training sessions, and participants only need an electronic device to access Google Meets. Questions are asked throughout the chat option, making a video camera and a mic unnecessary. Anybody interested can access the meetings using the google.com/pxp-ztzf-gkz address. And the sessions will be held April 15th at 6 o'clock p.m., April 26th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, and May 17th at 2 o'clock p.m. You can call the Weather Service for that web address again. Well, the Pima County Recorder's Office is notifying about 30,000 voters that they'll need to provide proof of citizenship to prevent gaps in their voter registration. The letters sent by the letters stem from an error by the Arizona Motor Vehicle Division for those who obtained a driver's license before October 1st of 1996. At that time, MVD recorded those drivers as having provided proof of citizenship, when in reality they had not. Proof of citizenship was not required for a license at that time. The error was discovered in September, with the state Supreme Court allowing affected voters to continue voting in state and local races in 2024. The county recorder's office reported that it reviewed all affected records and determined the citizenship of nearly 5% of that list at the Arizona Secretary of State's office provided in January. The recorder's office is reviewing about 7,000 remaining records. And the recording's office is sending notices to voters in batches as they continue the review. Residents receiving a notification can send a copy of their birth certificate, their U.S. passport, U.S. citizenship certificate, or tribal identification documentation to the recorder's office using the self-addressed postage paid envelope sent with the notice. Impacted residents can also email the documents to voterdocs@recorder.pima.gov or submit in person at the recorder's office, and that's located at 240 North Stone Avenue in downtown Tucson. The recorder's office advised not to send original documents as they will not be returned. You can email the recorder .pima.gov or just call 520-724-4330 for more information. Pima County received 6 valid applications for the vacant District 5 seat on the Board of Supervisors. The board plans to appoint a supervisor to fill the seat on April 15th. Adelita Grijalva resigned during the April 1st meeting, with the resignation effective on April 4th. Grijalva recently announced that she will run for the U.S. House for District 7. The county received 10 applications. 3 applications did not reside in District 5, and 1 didn't submit all of the required documents. The 6 valid applications will be reviewed by the Board of Supervisors, and they are Louis David Areza Sr., Richard Hernandez, Andres Cano, Kimberly Baeza, Cynthia Abril Sosa Ontiveros, and Carla Bernal Morales. The 6 have been invited to a League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson Public Forum on Wednesday, today at 5:30 p.m. Go to bit.ly/4260tho to view the event details on the League's website and to join the forum. That web address again, bit.ly/4260tho, 5:30 tonight. Well, Heather Lapin, that is, the Pima County Sheriff's Lieutenant, who unsuccessfully ran for Sheriff Chris Nanos' job last year, has filed a $2 million notice of claim against Nanos, several PCSD employees, and Pima County. According to the claim, which is a precursor to a potential lawsuit, Lapin has been investigated 5 times by the department since she announced she was running against Nanos in September of 2023. Nanos and his, quote, loyalists, end quote, have engaged in egregious acts of retaliation, Lapin's attorney David Reese wrote in the claim. Nanos and his cadre not only subjected Lieutenant Lapin to unwarranted disciplinary actions that plainly were arbitrary and capricious abuses of PCSD's employment policies, but these persons also misused their positions in the PCSD and the PCSD resources for the specific purpose of influencing the election contest, the claim stated. On October 14th, less than 3 weeks before the election, Nanos placed the 19-year veteran and Sergeant Aaron Cross on paid administrative leave. At the time, Nanos said that while the department was investigating whether Cross campaigned for Lapin while in uniform, investigators learned Lapin colluded with the journalist, giving him access to inmates for interviews and providing him with access to deposit funds into inmates' accounts. Reese said it's no coincidence that Lappin was suspended for just 5 days after the Pima County Board of Supervisors' Matt Hines endorsed her in a Daily Star interview. According to the claim, Corrections Bureau Chief Scott Lowing brought Lappin into his office on October 14th after complaints came in over the weekend that Cross was campaigning for her on Tucson's north side while wearing his uniform. Lappin said she knew he'd be campaigning, but said she did know what he'd be wearing, and he was suspended later that afternoon and told to turn in her work phone. According to the claim, Nanos and his loyalists brought her in about Cross solely so they could get her phone and go fishing for anything they might be able to spin into an attack on Lappin's reputation in the final weeks prior to the election to bring disciplinary proceedings against her or both. What they discovered were texts between her and Arizona Luminary reporter John Washington. According to the claim, Lappin was still relatively new to her position at the jail in July of 2024 when Washington contacted her about interviewing two inmates. Lappin, the claim stated, consulted with several colleagues at the jail about how to handle that request and how Washington could reimburse one of the inmates for the cost of the calls. One of her fellow lieutenants told her all she needed to do was give the inmates Washington's name and number and to recommend they not speak to the media, and that's what she did, according to the claim. As for the reimbursement, Lappin told Washington he could put money into the inmates' books using the portal or by coming to the jail, which is the same advice given on the PCSD website. According to the claim, no one raised any concerns about these events until 3 months later when it was becoming clear Lappin was going to win the election. It was at that point that Lappin was placed on leave. Nanos issued a press release despite knowing that Lappin hadn't colluded with Washington regarding payments to the inmate, the claim stated. Moreover, the claim said if Nanos had listened to the recorded calls between Washington and both inmates, he'd know there were no discussions of improper quid pro quo and that no improper quid pro quo had been provided. When Lappin was suspended, she was told that if she wanted to leave her home for any reason, she had to first report to Captain Christy Anderson, a supporter of Nanos, and she had to use her sick or vacation time to do so. However, according to the claim, PCSD policies state people on paid leave have complete freedom of movement. The claim stated Lappin began having stress-related health issues, sought medical advice, and sought to put herself on paid sick leave 9 days into her paid leave. She later went on leave via the Family Medical Leave Act, or FMLA. According to the claim, Lappin wasn't interviewed about the allegations regarding the inmates, said the reporter, and the reporter until December 2nd and December 4th. At the conclusion of the interviews, Lappin was told she no longer was a part of the investigation into Cross. No action would be taken against her. According to the claim, the fact Lappin was cleared of wrongdoing proves that Nanos and his supporters only wanted her phone to find, quote, dirt on her, end quote. After returning to work, Lappin was ordered to spend 2 weeks reading standard operating procedures and 6 weeks shadowing her colleagues to punish and embarrass her, the claim stated. As of this date, the notice of claim, Lappin has not been returned to her normal duties at the jail. According to the claim, Lappin was working at the training center when she agreed to fill in for Lieutenant Bob Kreiser during a general instructor school for a couple of days because she taught the class on 7 occasions in the past. Lappin informed Captain Charlene Reese and other lieutenants about the argument and the arrangement 11 days prior to the class, but neither objected despite knowing Krieger's presence in the class was mandatory as the master instructor, the claim stated. The claim further claims that Mission Bureau Chief Buddy Janes, or Janice, knew Crozier's presence was mandatory, but he allowed the classes to occur in order to manufacture a situation in which Sergeant Lappin or Lieutenant Lappin could be punished. According to the claim, Captain Chrissy Anderson sent an email to 23 individuals informing them that they had to repeat the class because the Arizona Peace Officer Standards and Training Board wouldn't certify the class since Crozier wasn't present for the entire course. The email, which wasn't sent to Lappin, said she and Kreiser didn't make the necessary accommodations to ensure compliance with the AZPOST for his absence. The email was designed to malign Lieutenant Lappin's reputation among his fellow deputies, the claim stated. 1 month later, on November 6th of 23, Lappin received a disciplinary letter of counseling in her file, which stated in part she had violated rules about modeling appropriate workplace behavior and conducting her personal and professional life in a manner that reflects favorably on the department. In addition, the letter claimed Lappin cost the county $76,000 in wages. According to the claim, Nano signed the letter, which they believe was highly unusual. Nano's personally involved himself in order to intimidate Lieutenant Lappin and to ensure that the LOC would damage Lieutenant Lappin's reputation as much as possible, according to the claim. Lappin drafted a response to the letter in which she said she fully trusted Kreiser's expertise and his ability to accurately assess and verify the completion of the training. On November 8th of 2023, Lappin was transferred to the jail immediately to punish and to intimidate her, the claim stated. Several months later, in July of 2024, Washington reviewed the interviews with the inmates. Nanos was declared the winner of the election on December 6th. Lappin returned to work the following month. Nanos had won by 481 votes out of nearly 500,000 votes that were cast. According to the claim, on January 7th, Lappin was given a written acknowledgement of verbal counseling for using her family on medical leave while on administrative leave. On January 21st, she received a letter of reprimand signed by Nanos for not filling out specific form documenting contact between inmates and reporters, a form Corrections Bureau Captain Benjamin Hill didn't even know existed before he began investigating the situation, according to the claim. On February 11th, Lappin was informed she could not accept off-duty jobs for a year, depriving her of thousands of dollars in supplemental income. As a result, Lappin wasn't allowed to be the event coordinator for the Colligard Classic Golf Tournament, a position she had held for 5 years. According to the claim, Lappin was told on March 7th she's under investigation for the fifth time since she announced she was running for sheriff. This time, the claim stated she's under investigation for writing a letter to a judge in support of a former employee awaiting sentencing for his role in an incident at the jail. This time, the claim started she's under investigation. Lappin claims her constitutional rights have been violated and she has suffered professional and reputational damage and extreme emotional distress. Cross has also said filed a lawsuit against Nanos and the county. It remains pending in U.S. District Court at this time. Well, here's an update. A man that was mauled by 5 dogs early on Sunday died of his injuries on Wednesday, and the owner of the dogs has been arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. This according to the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Deputies found 43-year-old Kevin Ringel in the 500 block of West Camino Tierra about 9:10 a.m. Sunday with several injuries across his body. The site is about 2 miles northwest of San Javier Mission. Rango was taken to a hospital where court documents indicate he underwent up to 15 blood transfusions and 2 surgeries. According to investigators, Rango was attacked by approximately 5 canines that had escaped from a nearby property owned by 60-year-old Martin Martinez. A PCSD spokesman later said the dogs were not in a secured area and they were allowed to roam about the yard. Court documents indicate the dogs were German Shepherd mixes, Pit Bull mixes, and Mastiff mixes. According to the court documents, there were 3 prior reports about Martin's dogs biting people, and since 2022, Pima Animal Control had received 8 additional reports of people that were getting bit by Martin's dogs. He was arrested and initially charged with felony endangerment and felony assault by a vicious animal. The manslaughter charge was added after Rangul's death. An animal control officer from Pima Animal Care Center responded, took possession of all 5 canines involved in the incident. PACC Director Steve Kozacik said the dogs will be held on bond for 10 business days, and at the end of that period, the owner can pay the bond and ask for a hearing to determine if he can get the dogs back. If he doesn't pay the bond, PACC will assume ownership of the dogs and make a decision as to their future, he said. It is 9:51 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. You're listening to the Green Valley News. My name is Mark DeGroff. Thanks for joining me this morning. Well, Green Valley has a new used car lot, but you won't find any sales or financing staff on site because it's on a property that's owned by Northwest Healthcare. Over the past month, a steady stream of RVs and cars and motorcycles, trucks, golf carts, and campers has rotated through the parking lot on the northeastern corner of Esperanza Boulevard and La Cañada Drive, where Commerce Bank once did business. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie's Green Valley liaison, Doug Kenyon, said that despite residents' complaints, there's nothing the county or the local law enforcement can do because it is private property. Jim McBride, a property manager for Northwest Medical Center, which owns the site, said they'll be putting up no parking signs soon, but declined to answer any other questions. Stephanie Ferris, a Northwest Healthcare spokeswoman, declined to comment, quote, at this time, end quote. Several people attempting to sell their vehicles at the site declined to comment when contacted, while two spoke but didn't want to provide their names. One said he placed his vehicle there because it looked like the place to do so. Another said she was happy she was able to sell her camper and expressed disbelief that anybody would be upset about the sales lot. No one's breaking the law. No one's trashing the place, she said. Well, here's some good news. A commitment to the practical exercise of Christian values is transcending denominational and theological differences. Just ask the Santa Cruz Valley Stephen Ministry, a partnership of Protestant and Catholic churches that includes Our Lady of the Valley Parish, that is, Desert Hills Lutheran Church and Valley Presbyterian Church. A Stephen minister or a caregiver is a trained congregation member who provides emotional support and active listening to anybody in need of help, whether religious or not. For an hour a week, a Stephen minister typically has one care receiver at a time and meets with that person once a week for about an hour. The training program was started by Stephen Ministry, which is a non-denominational, non-profit Christian organization that offers a training program for those that are committed to their faith and who want to help others. It is not a counseling program. The nonprofit formed in 1975 and has a presence in all 50 states and 30 countries. It takes 50 hours of training to be a Stephen minister, so it's not something people go into lightly. They usually feel like they've been called to it, and you have to be dedicated, said Carol Bates Smith, who is the co-chair of the Santa Cruz Valley Ministers and member of Desert Hills Lutheran Church. She has been a Stephen Minister team leader since 2021. I believe the Santa Cruz group formed well before COVID, she said. There was a recognized need that all of us struggle in our different ways of providing care. And if we get together as a group, we can learn from each other. We can find new ways to do things. Jana Homerman, a member of the Valley Presbyterian Church and the co-chair and team leader since 2011, said the Stephen Ministry addressed a collective need to provide more effective community service. Bates Smith and Honerman said the most common needs for support include grief, chronic illness, terminal illness, and loneliness. One major thing is to listen to them, and we let them talk out what's going through their heads. After a while, we see them once a week for about an hour, woman to woman or man to man. In that hour, we're listening. We're not telling them what to do. We're not fixing anything, Bates Smith said. We're just letting them work through their problems, their grief, whatever is happening to them. We just want to be there with Christ to help them out. Stephen ministers are the caregivers. God is the caregiver. We have to constantly trust in God. Horneman said the program has run into a few challenges based on COVID and Green Valley's unique demographics. The pandemic actually made it difficult in many ways because of the isolation, especially those few months the Stephen ministers are no longer meeting directly with their care receivers. It was by phone calls or other types of communication, and it was awkward, Honerman said. I think one-on-one connection is so important. It really made it difficult for the Stephen ministers. We got very few people that asked for a Stephen minister, I think because of the COVID. It slowed things down. I do know this much. Since COVID, we have had a lot of people that have increased the number of referrals for professional help, said Bartush, referring to issues that are beyond the scope of Stephen Minister's help. Mary Bartush is the team leader of Our Lady of the Valley and Stephen Minister since 2016. Aging out is an ongoing but expected issue, citing deaths both of caregivers and caretakers. Bates said in the range for active participation as a Stephen minister can go anywhere from a year to 10 years, depending on the health of the caretaker. She added that the great care is taken to select the right caretakers and ensure they feel good and healthy enough for service. Batesmith said there are certainly personality traits that make an ideal caregiver. Someone who's willing to listen and someone who's patient, she said. And someone who controls that impulse to try to fix, she added. Because so many of them are so caring, all of them, they care for people so much it's hard not want to give a more tangible type of help. So they have to really be able to control that and trust. I think they need to have a deep Christian faith, and they are there doing God's will, but God is ultimately the caregiver. I truly got called by God to do this, Bates Smith said, and I have not regretted it one moment. I absolutely fell in love with the program, Honerman said. It was amazing. When I moved here, I looked specifically for a church that had a Stephen ministry program so that I would have the opportunity to participate. Well, let's take a quick look at today in history. Mary Jackson, who studied the airflow over aircraft wings, today, 1921 through 2005. Hugh Hefner was born today in 1926. Robert E. Lee surrendered, and the Houston Astrodome opened on April 9th of 1965, the world's first indoor air-conditioned dome sports stadium. A year later, the dome made history again when it showcased the first installation of, you got it, AstroTurf. 1859, Mark Twain receives his steamboat pilot's license. On April 9th, 1859, 23-year-old youth named Samuel Langhorne Clemens received his steamboat pilot's license. He had signed on as a pilot's apprentice in 1857 while he was on his way to Mississippi. He had been commissioned to write a series on comic travels for the Keokuk Daily. And in 1866, Ulysses S. Grant was arrested for speeding in his horse buggy, according to newspaper reports. 1 year after Robert E. Lee surrendered at a Potomac courthouse, decades before police officers would be pulling over speeding cars, the National Intelligencer reports that Ulysses S. Grant, a Lieutenant General of the United States Army, had been pulled over for speeding in his buggy. In 1881, Billy the Kid was convicted of murder just one day after the trial. He was found guilty of murdering the Lincoln County, New Mexico sheriff, and he was sentenced to hang. Let's see what else we got here. On April 9th of 1940, German warships enter major Norwegian ports. From Narvik to Oslo, deploying thousands of German troops and occupying Norway. At the same time, German forces occupy Copenhagen and other Danish cities. And in 1942, April 9th, Major General Edward P. King surrendered in Bataan, the Philippines, against General Douglas MacArthur's orders, and 78,000 troops, which included 66,000 Filipinos, 12,000 Americans are the largest contingent of U.S. soldiers ever to surrender or taken captive by the Japanese. Thank you for listening. See you next Wednesday.